What did you think when you saw the video?
Well, whenever I see things like that, you know, as chief, it's concerning because the optics look bad. But I also know that I don't have the full story. And, you know, whenever there are Facebook videos like that that are out there posted, I know that they don't give full context. I know that the camera angles are somewhat are oftentimes deceiving. And so I cannot, as chief, you know, pass any judgment, you know, when I'm seeing those types of videos at the outset.
I'm assuming you're probably going to, if you haven't already, ask to see the body cam videos.
Yes, I have, and I've reviewed those videos, and they tell a much different story, absolutely.
With all this going on social media, doesn't this hurt efforts to rebuild trust?
To a degree it does, because good people in our community, when they see those sorts of videos, and there's no context, and then they start hearing the rumors, and they sometimes have questions, and they are sometimes a little concerned about police activity. And again, these are some of our supporters when they see those. So that's why it's important, and that's why I'm glad I had an opportunity to talk with you today, because the real story needs to get out so that we can, you know, kind of douse some of the rumors that are out there, and people can hear that what actually happened out there was some outstanding police work, that where officers showed a great deal of restraint, a great deal of patience. They were professional, and they were courteous out there. And I'm very, very proud, actually, after I watched the entirety of the body-worn camera video and kind of compare that to what we saw with the Facebook video, and it showed that, you know, those officers here in Albany and officers across the country, for that matter, are dealing with some very, very difficult circumstances in this climate of social media and increased scrutiny of police operations. And in some corners, you know, some of the anti-police rhetoric that we've been seeing around locally as well as across the country.
Could you give our listeners a brief audio sketch of what actually happened?
Sure. And just for context, you know, that neighborhood is a neighborhood that's been experiencing some increased activity. I was at a neighborhood association meeting there a week and a half or 2 weeks ago or so, and I was met by a group of very, very concerned residents. You know, there was a lot of anger in the group, a lot of fear, a lot of frustration, lots of concerns. And the general sentiment that I got from that meeting is that those residents did not feel that the police department was doing nearly enough to address some of the issues that were occurring in that neighborhood. And they, you know, they were pleading and in many cases demanding that we have some increased presence in that area, and that we were much more proactive in dealing with some of the issues from crime, quality of life, other intimidation type of things that were occurring in that neighborhood. And so just for context, that was the reason why we had such an increased police presence in that area. And in fact, over the last 7 to 10 days or so, we've had officers detailed to that area because, you know, some of the concerns that the residents were raised with me and with some of the other officers at the neighborhood association meetings, it turns out that there was some validity to it. And so on that particular night of the incident, the officers approached the vehicle that was stopped in the middle of the roadway. And, you know, the officers, you know, I'm sure their first instinct was to find out, you know, was the person that's driving that vehicle under some sort of distress. And so they're approaching the vehicle, and once they got there, they immediately were met with resistance from the driver, and, you know, the officers suspected some sort of narcotics activity, and so they gave the driver a lawful command to exit the vehicle, and the driver just flat out refused. And after several more demands and from the officers to exit the vehicle, the person still continued to to resist and not comply, and at that point the officers made a decision to place that person under arrest for obstruction. And at that point, the person, the driver, was told that she was under arrest and to exit the vehicle so that the officers could finish with the arrest. And still, just flat out refused to comply with the officers, sat in the vehicle, refused to move, was argumentative. And in, to the officers' credit, and this is what I'm so proud of with those officers, is that they used a great deal of restraint and de-escalation at that point in dealing with that situation, because they would have been totally justified at that point once the driver refused to exit the vehicle and comply with the arrest. They would have been justified in physically removing the person from the vehicle and physically affecting that arrest at the very outset. But these officers attempted to de-escalate that situation, and they're asking this person. In fact, they were asking this person to comply with the arrest for about 7 to 8 minutes after the person was told that, that she was under arrest. I mean, that's remarkable. You know, that to exercise that sort of discretion and restraint under those circumstances when you have been totally justified and would not have been wrong to do it another way, but you know, you can tell that they're consciously thinking about, you know, their, you know, what are some other strategies for resolving this short of having a physical confrontation. This person continued to resist. And at that point, a crowd started to gather around the officers. And at that point, it became an officer safety issue because, you know, you can't stand out there pleading with somebody to comply with an arrest when you've got a crowd that's becoming fairly hostile that's around. So they had to finish up with this arrest situation and get that person out of that area and to the station house. And so they, at that point, they made a decision to remove that person from the vehicle, and the driver was clinging to the steering wheel of the vehicle with one of her hands. And this is where some of the part of the interaction was misinterpreted, because there was a perception, and there were rumors, and the narrative indeed was that the officers were punching this person in order to effect this arrest, and had the rumors and innuendo and narrative was that they were punching this person in the head area, punching her in the face, but that's absolutely not true. You know, the person was halfway out the vehicle. The officers are now trying to get her totally out the vehicle, and she's clinging to the steering wheel of the vehicle with one of her hands. And so the officers used a forearm to forearm strike, several strikes to the driver's forearm area in order to get her to release that steering wheel. And after several strikes, she did indeed release that steering wheel. So these were not punches. These were forearms from the strikes from the officer's forearm to the driver's forearm, and no strikes whatsoever to that person's head or face area. And then once the person was removed from the vehicle, then she continued to resist the officers, refused to get in the police cruiser so that she could be transported to the jail, and you know, again, just flat out told the officers that she's not getting in the car. And so they sat, and this is another testament to the discretion and the de-escalation thought that the officers had at that time. Was that they, again, for about another 8 minutes or so, they were there almost pleading with this driver to get into the squad car so that she could be transported to the station. And, you know, it still refused. And after several minutes there, they had to forcibly place her inside the squad car to be taken to the station.
What is your message as chief to the neighborhood and to the community at large?
Well, for our neighborhoods, the message is clearly that we will be responsive to the needs of our neighbors and the residents in our neighborhoods. And, you know, whether it's traffic-related concerns or quality of life or crime, You know, we're going to be proactive. We're going to try to anticipate some of these things before they happen. But certainly when we get complaints from residents in this community about disorder in our communities, then we're going to take action. You know, we're going to respond. You know, that's what our residents expect. We're going to do it in a constitutional way. We're not going to violate anybody's rights. We're going to use the appropriate discretion, and we're going to do it in a very professional way, but we are going to respond. And also to the community at large, and I've said this many times, my advice when given a command, a lawful command by a police officer, even if you don't believe that command to be lawful, comply with that command. Comply with the command. The time to debate is not on the streets. There will be some time if a person feels that they were given an unlawful command. There are administrative penalties that could be applied, civil penalties, criminal penalties even, if it rises to that point. But the point that I make is that the time to challenge those decisions by an officer when an officer gives a lawful command are not on the streets. It can take a situation that starts off fairly benign, like a normal traffic stop, and it could descend to something where there's a physical confrontation that places many people at risk. You know, the officers, the person that the officers are dealing with, and even innocent bystanders. And so I think we all have a obligation whether it's a traffic stop or whether it's officers that, you know, if they give a lawful command that, you know, on the streets, we have an obligation to cooperate. And if the officer's actions were improper, then there are consequences that can be taken at a later time.